Today's episode is brought to you by Slay House Publishing, recorded at Wayne Howard Studios.
¿Listos?
Ya estamos
listos.
Check.
It is January 1995. Your grandparents are visiting and your mother is slogging down the last of the season's eggnog after a dinner full of tension and silence. You sit down in your Star Wars Boba Fett sweater to finish off the last pulse-pounding pages of Kevin J. Anderson's Champions of the Force, worried for Kip Duran, whose arms and legs are crushed as he folded himself into a ball and compacted himself into a hollowed-out torpedo capsule. Huh? Your mother comes in and leans on the door.
More Star Wars crap?
She asks you. And you remind yourself that the holidays have been really hard for her ever since Dad died. She doesn't get the rise she wanted, so she tries again, this time going for your throat.
Didn't Boba Fett, like, die or something in that movie?
You get defensive.
No, he's alive!
But she wouldn't even know because she hasn't read Dark Horse's masterpiece Dark Empire, where he's back and has his own ship. One day you're going to get a Boba Fett tattoo right on your arm and Mom won't be able to stop you, just like she couldn't stop Timothy from moving out, just like he said he would. Grandma interrupts with a throat-clearing noise and bustles in with a package under her arm.
I had a little late Christmas present for my little Star Trek boy,
she says. And you fight hard to correct her because...
You fart hard.
Yeah, you fart hard. She's trying to be nice. But inwardly, you know you're not one of those nerds. And she should know better. But you open up the present anyway and see Luke Skywalker standing proudly on the front cover of Hugo and Nebula award-winning author Vonda McIntyre's new book, Star Wars, The Crystal Star. And you love Grandma because... Maybe she doesn't understand you, but she listens to you.
Merry Christmas, darling,
she whispers. And you just know, as you sink back into Dad's old recliner, the one that still smells like aftershave and the stale cigarettes that killed him, that 1995 will be a good year, because if you can count on anything, you can count on more Star Wars.
All right, everybody. Wow, that was deep. That was
journey.
That was some good voice acting.
That was some good voice acting.
How'd you do that?
Let me try it.
Merry Christmas, darling.
Merry Christmas, darling.
Okay, so I did a little more old and
decrepit.
Yes, yes.
Yours is sweeter than mine was.
I sound like Herbert from Family Guy.
Hello, Henry.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
It's Star Wars Update 1995.
Hey, everybody. This is Jeremy. I'm with Slay House. This is Slay House Lipids. We've gone off the rails. We barely even started. We've gone off the rails. This is Slay House Lit Bits presents, Slay House Publishing presents Lit Bits. I don't know what we are anymore. Trevor's got me so bothered by that little vignette of his 90s, like, Christmas story. So that was, you know, at least the one I'm used to, they want a Red Ryder BB gun. But in this version, they want a Star Wars book. Today, Trevor's right. Today, we're talking about Star Wars. And Trevor is going to do most of the talking. But I do want to introduce to you all... Curtis, who's been for the past number of episodes, he's been behind the scenes with us as part of our producers. He's now joining us on air.
Hello. So,
yeah, say hey, Curtis.
Hi, everyone. I'm Curtis.
You've heard him on the intro when it says live from Wayne Howard Studios or whatever. I don't even listen to the
intro.
Today's
episode was brought to you by, what did I say?
Something like
that's
that.
That's right. Today's episode is brought to you by Wayne Howard.
Slay House Publishing, recorded at Wayne Howard Studios.
See, yeah, told you guys. That's right. That's him. We got him live now, folks. Him with us. So
we
moved
heaven and earth.
I'm here to talk about Star Wars.
That's right.
Yeah. But not Star Wars like all us sane people know. We're talking about books.
Yeah, books. Really? Okay, so to kind of set the scene, aside from
please
my
do
weird
because you
vignette,
are the only one who's read all these. Like,
this is,
I haven't read them. Curtis hasn't
so
read
this,
them.
So this back in 2020.
I don't think most of the human population has read them. But go ahead.
No, nobody has. I mean, that's why I'm here, right?
I'm the least literate person in the room right now. Just dropping that in there. So that's what you should expect from me.
You don't have to be literate to read Star Wars, though. That's, that's kind of what I've learned.
That's a quote. That quote is a keeper.
Okay, so back in 2020, right? Like, I watched...
You said back in 2020 like it was a decade ago.
It was a decade ago. It was, though.
In these COVID times,
yeah,
it sure
we've
feels
lived
like it.
Through like multiple eons in the last year. It's not even been 12 months. No, so Mandalorian season 2 came out, and at the conclusion of Mandalorian season 2, I was blown away, and I was like, I need so much more Star Wars in my life than what I currently have. And so, looking for solutions for that, I was like, maybe I'll just read every Star Wars book ever. And I sat down and I started reading these Star Wars books that were printed back in.
So give us two things real quick. Give us a timeline and give us a total number of books, because I don't think people will appreciate that until they hear just how much you've read.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have appreciated how much. I mean, I certainly don't appreciate how much Star Wars is out there. I almost am resentful of how much Star Wars is out there.
Me too.
150 books, I'm sorry, 156 books, novels, were published between 1976 and 2014 when the current or the old canon was thrown out because Disney acquired Star Wars and then they obliterated the canon and started over fresh from 2014. And in between 2014 and now, 47 titles have been published in the new canon. This is not including the comic books that have been running since the 1970s, nor does it include any of the children's
novels. It's over 200 novels.
It's so much books. So what I did was this year I set out to read everything from 1976 to 1995.
Right? Jeez.
So everything from 1976.
And not only, let me just clarify this real quick. Not only did you read all these books, but now because of this new acquisition, they're not even canon anymore. So these books don't, they don't matter.
This is like in all aspects, a fool's errand. Like there is nothing that I read here that will contribute to anything. It is literally just wasting my life on stuff that nobody gives a shit about.
And now we're doing an entire episode on it.
And here, the promise of this episode, though, the promise of this episode is this won't be the only Star Wars update we do, because I'm going to keep doing these like for every year going forward of Star Wars that I complete reading. So I read everything between 1976 and really like December 1994. That's kind of when I stopped.
And if I can remind people really quickly, for those of you out there, I'm talking like we have thousands and thousands of fans out there, but for all of you out there who are listening and you're like, everything you've done so far is like horror. And aren't you horror? Like, check out our website, dude. We publish like sci-fi, fantasy, horror. So we've been talking a lot about horror, but we can talk about any of these genres that we want. So this is kind of our trek.
Since we started the podcast, it seemed to me like you guys had this horror stuff just on your mind for years and you're just purging it all at once.
Feel like it.
Yeah. Like it's all coming out, but then we'll like, you know.
Yeah.
It'll like a virgin on prom night who drank too much. I am purging all of the horror.
But my wife doesn't watch horror, so I can't watch horror. So coming here and listening to you guys, it's like, oh, I finally know what
Do you think you can get
about.
Her to watch Thanksgiving?
I'm not going to watch Thanksgiving. You guys talked me out of watching Thanksgiving.
I don't think anyone should watch Thanksgiving. I'm resentful that I had to watch Thanksgiving.
I don't even want to see it.
Even though I loved it.
Like, more or less resentful that you read all these Star
Wars
books. Oh,
no, nothing. Like, listen, this is just poison. Like to my brain, I've lost brain cells doing. And what's like crazy is that I'm not gonna stop. Like I'm committed now. I've read 19 novels this year of Star Wars, which is the number between 76 and 1995, and I can't stop.
Like 19.
19 novels. 19 novels. And that's not including the comics that I also read.
And that barely touches the 200 that have.
Right.
Come out.
Yeah. If I keep the same pace, it's going to take me 10 years to read all of Star Wars.
I worked with a guy that came in every day, and he was always carrying a Star Wars novel with him. And yeah. It was always a different one, so he was just flying through them.
Yeah, there are so many of them.
Yeah. He explained to me that they're not really related to each other.
And... Well, it's weird because, like, the novels do, like, create this shared universe, and that's part of what makes this so fascinating, because in the 1990s, basically after Return of the Jedi comes out, right, there's nothing for like 8 years. And then right. in 1991, LucasArts was like, you know what? Let's bring this publishing arm and make Star Wars a multimedia franchise with novels and youth novels and comic books and video games. Like, we're just going to go balls to the walls, full tilt, like, make a whole bunch of Star Wars stuff.
So Lucas Media was actually in charge of, like, they had a hand in these novels?
All of these books, allegedly, all of these books were approved by George Lucas himself.
Oh, I did not know that. Wow. I thought people were just out there, licensing.
But that kind of makes sense, though, because we don't, like, in retrospect, we don't realize, you know, Lucas was tinkering with the original movies at this point, and he was planning... Like, the prequels come out in the late 90s, early 2000s. 99. But he had, before that, he re-released all three original films in the theaters with new special effects. So he was consistently tinkering with Star Wars. Yeah. So Star Wars was on the brain. And I feel like almost since this is when the publishing took place or started, I don't have any proof of this, but it sounds to me like maybe Lucas had this kind of, here's what I'm doing this decade with Star Wars. Let's get public interest kind of ramped back up and get these novels out to help.
It's weird because, like, the stories that come from these novels are very much coming from the individual authors that wrote them. However, you know, they would go to George Lucas for approval of these manuscripts, or at least the outlines, before anything was published. So yeah. Lucas, and then... you know, his big, like, media bosses, you know, kind of lording over this literature, would make calls and basically say to different authors, like, no, you can't do that, or yeah, that's fine, let's do it, you know. So you'd have this development of this shared universe of storytelling through a whole bunch of different authors' competing visions. And behind the scenes, not all of them got along. Not all of them agreed with where they were taking the canon. Not all of the authors agreed where the canon was going.
How many authors?
Dozens. I mean...
Really? Okay. You just think like about 3 or 4 people?
No, like, you think about 156 novels. Like, there were probably like 140 different authors, right? Like, they all kind of go crazy.
Okay, yeah.
So we'll
it's too bad we didn't have that kind of editorial restraint the past 5 years.
Yikes!
Yikes! Ooh.
No, I mean, legitimately.
Shut up.
I hate the Abrams films. Like, the sequel trilogy pushed me out of Star Wars. Mandalorian roped me back in, and, like, Mandalorian was cool. So good that I was like, I want to read everything Star Wars. You know, like,
I haven't seen any of it, and to me, aesthetically, Mandalorian looked like really in line with the Abrams visuals and all that.
I mean,
does it kind of have the same aesthetic, at least?
I don't think so. Okay. I mean, yes, because Star Wars as an aesthetic, just like, it all kind of pairs up where it pairs up.
Right.
Jon Favreau really knows what he's doing.
Yeah, Favreau
like has the pulse, has a hand, a beat, a finger on the pulse of just, I think, nerdism in general, like with Iron Man and now Star Wars. I mean, he knows what this should look like.
And Dave Filoni, did he do Mandalorian?
Yeah.
Jon Favreau
was the one of the creative directors behind Mandalorian. Same with Dave Filoni, who also did the Star Wars Clone Wars cartoon series.
That was a great series.
So they're really into Star Wars, like really deep into Star Wars.
Will Ferrell hates Jon Favreau. He just turned down a $29 million role in Elf 2 because he fucking hates Jon Favreau.
Wow.
Really?
That's wild.
Oh, wow.
He won't work with him again.
That's crazy.
But yeah, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. Did he direct Elf? He directed Elf.
Yeah.
So no Will Ferrell in The Mandalorian Season 3, I guess.
I guess not.
Damn, right, we're missing out there. Missing out. So like, my concept for this episode was just to go through, like, each of these different books and to talk very briefly about what they are and, like, What's weird
can,
or what's
can
interesting
we make fun
about
of them along the way?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so get us started.
That's
man.
All I'm going to be able right. to do. Yeah, because I don't. Yeah, I'm
okay.
Out of the
loop. So, like I said, 19 novels, right, were published between 1976 and 1994. The first of the novels actually predates the film. It was Star Wars: From the Adventures of Luke Skywalker. That was the full title in 1976. It was written by George Lucas, allegedly, but it was actually ghostwritten by a guy named Alan Dean Foster, who is really well known for doing like a lot of sci-fi adaptations from shows. So he wrote like the Star Trek cartoon series as novelizations.
Wow.
I think he novelized Alien, the movie Alien for Ridley Scott. Yeah, so I mean,
got
like,
some, he's got some pedigree.
He's got, yeah. Okay. So he wrote the first book, which plays a lot like the script of Star Wars. There's really not a whole lot of difference. But then he also was contracted to write two books. The first was going to be the adaptation of the script, and the second was going to be a proposed sequel. And this is what's really fun about it, because George Lucas was like, I need you to write a book that will serve as a low-budget sequel in the case that Star Wars does not do well.
Cool.
And so Alan Dean Foster writes the official sequel to Star Wars called Splinter of the Mind's Eye from the Adventures of Luke Skywalker. And in this
cool
one...
I just had a TMNT kind of visual there.
Yeah. I just got goosebumps.
Splinter the Rat.
Yeah, kind of. But it's not. It's
what
like,
was it? Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
Yeah.
That...
Yeah, wow. Splinter of the Mind's
That's
Eye.
That's good.
I mean, the cover is bonkers. The cover is like Luke and Leia on this weird like swamp planet, and Darth Vader's in the background with like a glowy rock or something like that.
Tight.
So it's pretty insane.
So how different is this from like say
Fucking
Empire?
Fucking crazy different, right?
Okay, so fill us in.
Yeah.
Us.
So this movie this book comes out in 1978, and we know that Empire Strikes Back doesn't come out until 1980, right?
Right.
The story is basically Leia and Luke end up on a stranded on a planet where they discover a kyber crystal, not the kyber crystal that is used in lightsabers later on, but the name kind of sticks.
Of course.
Kind of changes. Right. Yeah. Naturally, like you know.
Like everyone knows.
Like
right?
everyone knows. Everyone knows kyber crystals are used in the fucking lightsabers.
Not that
kyber crystals were used to power the Death Star. Get with it. Get with the program.
That's why it goes pew pew.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
This makes that sound.
It's exactly. So they discover the kyber crystal, which amplifies the power of the force. And so they start searching for the crystal while trying to avoid Imperial slavers on this planet, as well as their fearsome leader, Darth Vader, who shows up.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Now, this book was planned as a, like I said, a low-budget sequel in case Star Wars did not do well. But what's hilarious is that, like, Lucas was like, you can't use certain elements in this story because, for example, no Han Solo or Chewbacca. Can't have them in the story because Harrison Ford had not signed a contract to do more than one movie. So they're like, if we have a sequel, you can't put these characters in your sequel because if Harrison Ford doesn't return, we don't have a Han Solo.
Oh,
right?
My God.
Yeah.
A mountain of contingencies, I bet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just other stuff was like.
Does that mean Chewbacca hadn't signed the contract either?
Well, I mean, can you have a Han Solo without a. Or a Chewbacca without a Han Solo? Like, I feel like they're.
You're asking us this after the. The there last two Star Wars films?
Just had to do that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What's funny is that...
Abrams, you and I are going to fight.
Really funny is that in the canon, this is getting ahead of myself, but in the canon, in 1999, they kill off Chewbacca. And then he's just not around for the
Yeah, since
rest
this is only update 95, you can't really talk about 99.
Yeah, that's right.
They literally killed him? How did he die?
I don't know yet. I haven't gotten to the book.
Just kind of...
Well, no, they. Fade I off. Mean, he. They did kill him. Like he blew up on a planet or something like that.
Oh.
Like a planet blew up and he died.
Classic.
Yeah. I'll get to it when we do Star Wars Update 2000.
Right. We're not there yet.
Not there yet. Yeah. So.
I'm just now graduating high school, folks.
Yeah, because everything had to be like Really?
95.
You just gave away your age.
I know. I mean, I admitted in previous episodes that I'm Gen X, so I mean, 95, I mean, graduating high school in 95, that fits right along with it. So.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I'm old.
You're old.
Sonny.
How old were you in 1978?
One.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here's the cool thing. So Star Wars came out in what, 77, 78? But it was it was re-released in the theater with the new title, A New Hope, right before Empire came out. And I know this because I was 2 years old, so it was 79. I was 2 years old because my parents took me to see Star Wars, and I pissed all over my mother when the sand person popped up to attack Luke.
Really?
Like that scene? Yeah, I've seen every Star Wars in theater since I was like a baby.
That's amazing.
So,
do you still piss on your mom every time?
I do. I'm like, Mom, I'm coming over. Mom, I'm watching Star Wars. Better get the slicker on.
You know that old family tradition.
Actually, no, I don't. I don't. I piss on my wife now. It's part of our old family. We turned it into a game.
We just lost your wife.
Glad to take that baton.
We just lost. Yeah, we had to piss off somebody this episode. So.
It's terrible. No, so like some weird shit in this book though that's hilarious. And again, I remind you, George Lucas only made one real change to the manuscript when he first saw it, and it was to take out a fight scene, like a starship scene at the beginning of the movie where they were dogfighting, because he was like, dog fighting's too expensive. You got to take that out. If I got to film this, I can't film that part. So that was the only change he made. So weird stuff is like Luke and Leia on this planet when they you know, crash land or whatever, and he finds her. They're trekking through this jungle. And one night as Leia's sleeping, Luke is like watching her, and he's like, she's so pretty.
Weirdo.
She's so good looking.
Well, I guess
she's
it's
your sister.
I guess it's not canon yet. It's not canon yet.
That's the thing. George Lucas had no fucking idea that they were siblings, right? Like, let's just put. He will tell you, like, it was always the plan. It was always the plan. Bullshit. He didn't know any of the relationship of the characters. I'm convinced that the whole, like, Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's dad thing only came, like, spur of the moment. Like he had no idea where those characters were going, and he was just like, you know what, let's just try this.
You know, actually the real line, they did that line in post-production of Empire. The real line, Vader tells Luke, and think about Luke's reaction. He tells him, I ate the last burger. True story. I ate the last burger, and Luke's like, no!
It's impossible! You already had breakfast! So
look,
he's
very
like,
closely, and you can see Luke's words change just a little bit to fit
that. So in this
book, changed it. Yeah.
Again, in this book, like he's like thinking about how hot Leia is, right? And like he gets to the point where he actually is like, I could sleep with her, but I shouldn't. Like he thinks about raping Leia, but that's not a thing heroes do, and that's why he doesn't rape
George.
Her. It was, oh my gosh, I don't understand anything. So then later he like, they're like trying to hide from these Imperials. They're like in a cafe or something, and they're trying to blend in. And Leia doesn't know how to blend in anywhere because
that song plays in every cafe there.
Yeah. Fun fact about that song. That's from a musical style in Star Wars called Jizz. What?
Yeah.
That's a real
jazz
thing.
In Star Wars is called Jizz.
It's called Jizz. So
sit back right now, folks, on your ride home. I'm Jeremy here taking you to meet your loved ones as you get off work tonight. And I'm going to let you relax with a little bit of Jizz.
Oh, man.
A little smooth Jizz.
Some smooth
for
Jizz
your
to fill your ears. Smooth Jizz to fill your ears.
I hate it.
How incredibly naive to go there.
Who was the person who was like sitting around with George Lucas and they were like, what's this music called? Jizz.
Is it jazz?
What
jizz.
A troll. Jizz. That guy was just trolling. Yeah.
And George is like, oh, yeah, cool. Yeah, I like it. I like it. I like jizz.
Yeah. This is the most sexually explicit episode we've ever done.
Even more than the Clive Barker episode.
Even more than this is beating out Star Wars episode.
It's beating out.
I think you're uncovering how big of a perv George Lucas is, really.
No, it's truly bad. So, they're hiding in a cantina, and like Princess Leia doesn't know how to be incognito, like a recurring theme through all of these books, because she's a princess, right? Like she doesn't know how to hide, and so Luke, in a moment of panic,
princesses can't hide. Yeah, everyone knows that.
In a moment of panic,
she doesn't look
Druish.
Yeah,
Spaceballs. Someone asks, Spaceballs is a better Star Wars movie than this Star Wars book is a Star Wars book. Like,
yeah. I do like the Schwartz.
Yeah, the Schwartz.
I hate it when Schwartz gets tangled.
Yeah, the Schwartz sits better with me than the Force
but
does.
But back to the cantina scene, right?
Okay,
like,
okay,
so
okay.
He's like sitting around in this bar.
You're never going to get through this. We keep interrupting.
No, so somebody comes in and like... they're like, who are you? You're not from around here. Like this, who's this girl you're with? And Luke, just full on is like, she's my slave. And, she like starts to,
it's my response.
She starts to mouth off to him and he just full on slaps her across the face. Luke Skywalker
nice.
Slaps his sister, who he was previously thinking of having sex with. I'm just saying, this book is weird.
He's so out of line so far.
Yeah.
Every bit of it.
Yeah, yeah, no, it makes no sense. And honestly, it's like Alan Dean Foster.
Not the way of the Jedi these are.
Yeah. For real, it's like he ghostwrote the book for George Lucas, but paid no attention to the characters he was ghostwriting.
I feel like this is going to be a theme of most of these books.
Oh, yeah, hands down. Yeah. Characters who or writers who write Star Wars and don't even know that it's like Star Wars.
But again, George signed off on all of these ideas?
Signed off on all of these
okay.
ideas.
All right, cool.
So this was,
I still blame
like,
him then.
This was a thing. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You should have known better, George.
I mean, this was in the 80s, and there was a lot of coke going around. So.
Well, this is the 70s.
70s and 80s,
there
yeah.
was a lot of, it, like, you know, crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a sweet
yeah.
spot.
Energy crisis. No, so anyway, it's really a terrible book, and it's almost like Alan Dean Foster just... Like I said, it's like he didn't even read the book that he just wrote, and then he wrote this new book, and it makes no goddamn sense. The cool stuff in this book, though, that I actually do like, Princess Leia has a lightsaber fight with Darth Vader at the end of the book, and then she gets her shit rocked, and Luke then beats Vader in a lightsaber fight again.
I was so hoping you'd say an arm wrestling match.
It would be, that would be so much better.
Always with the lightsabers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. For once, you'd think they'd have a different contest.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Every situation.
Pick
up
lightsabers
out.
Star Wars jousting.
No, okay. Not even Star Wars Joust. Just the game, the video game Joust.
Oh, yeah.
That should be your contest now.
There you go.
Yeah. So moving
Luke,
on.
We are going to play horse.
After the success right of Splinter of the Mind's Eye, right, and of course the success
the
of Star Wars,
success.
Yeah, the air quotes yeah. success. After Star Wars came out in 1977, right, Star Wars is exploding, and so Del Rey,
it's exploding like jizz.
Yeah,
there yeah. it is.
What other kind of explosion can you have in Star Wars? So yeah. it's like really blown up. Del Rey, the publisher, is like, we need more Star Wars content. So they reach out and basically like start hiring freelancers to come in and write some Star Wars. So this guy, Brian Daley, he just had kind of a nice little hit of a sci-fi book come out around 1976. 778, something like that. And he comes in and he's like, I need some, you know, I would do some gig work. You know, have you got anything that you'd like to write? And so the editors in Del Rey's office, they're like, yeah, you know, have you seen Star Wars? Do you like Star Wars? He's like, yeah, I kind of like Star Wars. He says, all right, write me an idea for a Star Wars trilogy. Like, pick a character, work up a treatment, and we'll see if we are interested. So he chooses Han Solo, and he makes this pitch to do a Han Solo trilogy, really. And Del Rey picks it up. They're like, yeah, let's do it. So he writes three books in the late 70s. He writes Han Solo at Star's End from The Adventures of Luke Skywalker. That's the tag for all of these three first books, right? 1979, this comes out. It's about Han and Chewie's attempt to rescue one of Han's former mentors from imprisonment at the infamous Corporate Sector Authority prison at Star's End. And this one is actually a banger of a book. It's like really bonkers and I like Looney Tunes kind of stupid, but it's got some it's got some great shit, let me tell you. Like Han Solo, when he goes to Star's End, it's on like this little planetoid, this like moon with low gravity, and he blows up the moon and like it sends this space jail like into orbit, and like he's like trying to get out with Chewbacca as this thing is like reaching apogee and then like coming crash back down on the moon.
Oh God!
It's wild. It's bonkers.
So much wrong with that.
Oh, it makes no goddamn sense in any kind of. But then like, do physics really count in the Star Wars universe? Like the Death Star explodes and makes a sound. You've got X-Wings and TIE fighters fighting in space as if they're in air, like they're dogfighting in a way that makes no fucking sense with space physics. Like at some point in time, you just have to be like, all right, cool, have fun with this, you know, like
just
you can't
nothing
you
really
can't
matters.
Sit
just
around
go.
And be like, that's not how we're not Neil deGrasse Tyson,
right?
Like stop shitting on people's fun.
It's fiction, just write
fiction.
It
brothers and sisters sleeping together.
Just go with it. It's just fun.
I feel like these pitch meetings to like Lucasfilm for like these different novels would have gone down similarly to like that scene in Three Amigos when they go to meet like Harry Flugelman, the Joe Mantegna character.
Joe,
you guys
Mantegna.
Remember that? And like he's like they're like going over like, yeah, we have the Amigos going to, you know, have the Amigos going to date women in like the 1920s Mexico or something, and and you know, little Nettie goes to war and all this, and he's, you know, I mean, I feel like I'm the only one who remembers this. Amigos.
I remember the dialogue from Three Amigos.
I've seen it one time.
I'm not sure I remember every single situation. I just remember the things they said.
Yeah. I got my love of puns from that movie, by the way, which is when the little biplane flies overhead and what's his name? Ned Niederlander, whatever the little guy that plays him.
Yeah.
Martin Short. Martin Short says, I think that's a mail plane. And Chevy Chase is like, how can you tell? And he said, didn't you notice it's a little balls?
And they didn't get it, right?
They didn't
and
get it. Yeah, they're just kind of looking at him. And he's like, little balls. Yeah.
All right. Are we talking about Star Wars?
We're talking about Star Wars, folks.
I'm lost. Like, I've seen that movie one time.
Trevor's like, okay.
Let's come back to the stuff I'm really passionate about. Yeah. No, so then Star Wars Empire Strikes Back comes out in 1980. It's adapted into a book by Donald F. Glut. There's really nothing to say. If you've seen Empire Strikes Back, you've read this book.
It's kind of a glut.
Yeah, but then the second of Brian Daley's trilogy comes out, Han Solo and the Lost Legacy. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's incorrect. There was Han Solo's Revenge from the Adventures
of
Luke
Skywalker.
Get it
right, man.
I know. It's really important that we get that right. That was 1979. In that book, Han Solo attempts to take down a slaving ring after a bad job costs him 10,000 credits. And it's, again, just what a bonkers book. Like the plot is freaking great because it's Han Solo. He's just like, I just want my fucking money, and he's just like running around and shooting up like these. He's shooting up these slavers. He's introduced to a bad guy named Galandro, who's like an old timey Western sheriff from like a Western movie. He's got like the big long handlebar mustache,
mustachios,
and he's a quick draw. And there's like. Like Han Solo beats him at a quick draw, basically by like wrecking his draw hand. He like stamps it with a hot pot or something like that. And so they have to draw with their no. He stuns him. That's what happens. He like stuns him, and they have to do a quick draw with the wrong hand. And Han Solo beats him at the quick draw. And like then they have a rivalry for the third book, and it's great. But it's also Looney Tunes. There's a talking otter who shows up.
Of course there is.
Of course there is.
That's where South Park got the idea.
Was that a South Park idea? Yeah, they were like, Han Solo's Revenge, we gotta do this.
So then the third book was Han Solo and the Lost Legacy from the Adventures of Luke Skywalker. That one was September 1980, again by Brian Daley. Again, just like real Looney Tunes, crazy action. Basically, in this one, Han Solo teams up with an old smuggler friend to discover the lost treasure of an ancient warlord. And if that sounds like it's Indiana Jones, you're probably right. I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure George Lucas just like took a bunch of ideas from Brian Daley and
the
and
lost like, treasure of the something.
Because Lucas was also involved with Indiana Jones, wasn't he?
He was, Steven Spielberg. This was right about the same time that Indiana Jones was kind of coming out and doing that stuff. Brian Daley says when he, you know, submitted these manuscripts or whatever, basically George Lucas was like, you can't do certain things. Like, you can't make reference to the Force. That's not allowed. You can't make any stormtroopers. You can't use the Empire. You know, like, you have to make up your own shit. And Brian Daley was like, all right, man, whatever, and just bangs out these books. They're absolutely crazy, but
why these arbitrary
totally awesome.
Rules like that? Like, he's trying...
Again, I have no idea. I feel like it's because Lucas didn't know what to do with a lot of his universe and was trying to protect it from
a brand
perspective.
Yeah.
And so he's like, yeah, sure, license this stuff out. We can make money on it, but also, you know, don't ruin my ideas. Right. Like, don't do stuff that might have an impact on the stories I'm trying to tell.
And look how far Star Wars has come because he was thinking that way.
Right.
You know, that's probably pretty smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely worked out. These books are absolutely bonkers, but they are fun. I really enjoyed the Brian Daley stuff. So we get to Return of the Jedi in 1983, and around the same time, L. Neil Smith starts publishing Lando Calrissian books. There are three of them. And this is hilarious.
Who didn't want a Lando Calrissian trilogy?
Wait, Lando. Is that the guy with the mustache?
Yeah, Billy Dee Williams.
Okay, I always thought looked like...
Whom some of you might know from his Colt 45 commercials.
Yeah.
I like a smooth
I remember
drink.
That. Yeah.
Colt 45.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Billy Dee Williams was huge in the 80s, right? Like, he had a really good career going.
Was he in Predator?
For a bit of time. No.
No, that was Carl Weathers.
Who was also in Mandalorian.
I'm getting my mustaches mixed up is what's happening.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, I've for most of these Star Wars books, I actually read it in Carl Weathers' voice. For one thing, because it's free. you know. It's imagination. You can do anything you want.
You can
there.
Do it. Yeah.
Yeah. But also because I just think it's his take on Princess Leia is fucking hilarious.
Billy Dee Williams was in a cool late 70s crime thriller with Sylvester Stallone called Nighthawks.
Ooh.
That was like a gritty 70s police crime thriller. They're cops in like New York.
Well, you know
really
what
cool.
is what
I can hear the music now.
Is not cool.
What?
Lando Calrissian trilogy by L. Neil Smith.
Was that not good?
It's fucking terrible.
Oh,
right?
No.
So the first of these books was called Lando Calrissian and the Mind Harp of Sharu, where he is coerced into finding the fabled Mind Harp of Sharu for an evil sorcerer.
What's a mind harp?
I don't fucking know.
Oh.
I don't know. Like, truly,
it's a harp you
I
play with
know.
Your mind.
It's a futuristic
I don't think
instrument.
L. Neil Smith knew what a mind harp was. This thing reads, I'm not even joking, this thing reads like an acid trip.
Oh.
Like, Lando Calrissian goes on almost a very literal Alice in Wonderland kind of like trek. He goes to this planet and like all of a sudden he grows to like 1,000 feet tall and he's on an escalator for 60 hours or something.
He found some weird mushrooms as soon as
he
got there.
No,
that's
I'm telling
really
you,
happened.
that's what the mind harp was. I don't know. There is a story behind why these books are so bad though. And I do want to get to that in a moment. The second one was called Lando Calrissian and the Flame Wind of Ocean. That was also.
He's just putting words together like he's putting together
like
a British techno pop, like 80s pop man.
Yeah,
like,
no,
hello,
honestly,
we're the mind harp of Sarah, and we're going to play at your party tonight.
Yeah,
Hands up for the flame wind of Ocean over here.
Are we Michael Caine now?
We just trade up some accents. Yeah, basically. In the flame wind of Ocean, Lando Calrissian is lured into a trap by the evil sorcerer he outwitted in the previous book. And then in the third book, Lando Calrissian and the Star Cave of Thon Baca, which came out. The Star Cave of Thon Baca.
Dude, you keep blowing my mind with these titles. No,
because the Star Cave of Thon Baca is even better, because Thon Baca
is... Cave of Thon Baca is where you go to have your flame wind of Ocarcion after you've eaten too many beans and burritos.
You go to listen to your smooth jizz in the Star Cave of Thon Baca. No, but the word Thon Baca contextually in this book means Star Cave. So the title, as translated through Star Wars bullshit, is the Star Cave, Lando Calrissian and the Star Cave of Star Cave.
Oh, that's like ATM machine.
It's fucking yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah, it's terrible. So in this one, Lando Calrissian has to save a bunch of space whales from being murdered Space whales. This is a real thing. From an evil space sorcerer.
It just doesn't stop, does
it's
it?
Fucking
I'm gonna just have
terrible.
To control myself. No, I feel like I'm gonna be doing this the whole time.
It's so bad.
What?
It's so bad. Yeah. So L. Neil Smith, right? L. Neil Smith. He's like this diehard libertarian. Right. And like all of his literature is basically just secret libertarian propaganda. So like Lando Calrissian in this book.
It works for L. Ron Hubbard in Scientology. So.
Sure. Why not? Yeah. So no, Lando Calrissian, he's like.
Or Ayn Rand.
And he's like running around gambling and like the antagonists of these books, aside from the weird sorcerer of Kund or whatever. That is made up for this book because...
The Sorcerer of what?
Yeah, exactly.
Stop. Let's just stop right there.
Moving on. No, I'm telling you, Smith... Jesus. Smith basically was just like, I want a Sith Lord for my stories. And of course, George Lucas is like, no, that's a fucking terrible idea. No, you're not going to get a Sith Lord. And he's like, all right, well, I get a Space Sorcerer of Kund.
Oh my God! It's like they're like trading magic cards or something.
Yeah,
right?
it's terrible. Yeah. It's absolutely
no Sith
terrible
for you.
Yeah. So he's like, all right, I'll just make up my own space wizard.
No Sith for you.
Yeah, and I'll call it something
and
stupid.
And he's just a bunch of snakes. Like legitimately in the story, the sorcerer is just a bunch of snakes.
He's a bunch of snakes.
He's
so
a bunch
this
of
guy
snakes.
Just got done watching Conan the Barbarian.
I don't even know that that's
James
a,
Earl Jones
I don't think
turns
that's
into
what
a
I was
snake.
Doing. But like aside from the weird sorcerer,
ooh, Schwarzenegger in Star Wars, that'd be fun.
That would have been
I would
fun.
Watch the hell out of that. Oh, no, but so the, the space sorcerer, aside from him, like the antagonists of this book are all like government
who's your father
bureaucrats.
Now, Beach?
Like it should just be like Lando Calrissian and the bad space bureaucracy. Like that's
and the red
these movies are. Yeah. So the reason why these books even exist.
Some Muzak playing in the background while he's standing in line.
Yeah. Yeah. Smooth jizz.
Number 41 on the elevator. Number 41.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been a more interesting book than these like hot garbage pieces of crap. So Smith, like when he went to write these stories, basically he got a contract to write them, but then through some weird arbitration, his contract got shortened so that essentially he had to write a trilogy of novels in 9 weeks' time. So he just sat down. I don't know if he did a bunch of drugs. I just assume he did a bunch of drugs. And he just banged out these three books, and then they got published as this Lando Calrissian trilogy, and they are so bad.
Just I don't know, so man. Bad. You convinced me. They might be decent reading.
You should go, yeah, definitely. Put them on, yeah. Put them on your TBR.
He got paid, so whatever.
Yeah.
So there's a big break in publication for Star Wars after 1983. I don't think the Lando Calrissian books ever really did very well. I think maybe they sold okay, but there's just a long break from 83 until 1991. And around 1991, this is when in the early or late 80s, early 90s, when Lucas
Arts was really thinking about, like, how do we make this new arm of Star Wars and, like, actually do something interesting with it. So they team up with West End Games to create a role-playing game source book guide where they're trying to, like, collect all of this Star Wars information and create, like, a unified mythos for Star Wars. So from that point forward, all of Star Wars should actually technically be good, right? Because everybody's kind of like working in this shared universe and developing this mythos together.
I feel like there's
together.
About to be a but.
Oh, we're getting to it.
It should have been good.
It should have been good. No, so for 3 years at the very beginning of the 90s, we get a trilogy from Timothy Zahn, another award-winning sci-fi author. And this is kind of the idea is like, we get a whole bunch of award-winning sci-fi authors to write Star Wars books, and these books are going to be great, right? Mm. Timothy Zahn, award-winning or science fiction novelist. He writes Heir to the Empire in 1991, which is part one of his Thrawn trilogy. He introduces this dude named Grand Admiral Thrawn, who is the new antagonist for his trilogy. I think actually a worthy successor to Emperor Palpatine as a character. Thrawn is really interesting. In the first book, the heroes of Star Wars just battle with this Grand Admiral Thrawn, who's the last remaining Grand Admiral after the fall of the Empire. Book two comes out in 1992 called Dark Force Rising, and here the heroes compete to discover the location of the Dark Force, which is a whole bunch of, like, old dreadnought spaceships that Grand Admiral Thrawn is trying to get to, like, advance.
Some World War II-style spaceships?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah,
well,
that makes sense.
Yeah. Not World War II, but it's, like, they're
That's
old.
That's what a dreadnought is.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, in the Star Wars universe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
They don't have sails. They have hyperdrives. Get with the program.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
My dreadnought has a hyperdrive.
Mm.
Yeah. That's how I get to work every day.
Yeah.
And then The Last Command in 1993, again, Timothy Zahn. Part three of the Thrawn trilogy, all of the heroes band together for a final battle with Grand Admiral Thrawn. As his plans to destroy the rebellion and their new republic come to fruition.
I feel like there's a pun in there with Thrawn, but I haven't thought of one yet.
I've been working on it too.
Yeah. I'm not going to get upset about a lot of jokes, but this trilogy is fucking sacred, okay?
Oh, this is the good one?
No, this is the good one.
All right,
this
I'll
is the trilogy that we should have gotten from Star Wars.
How is Thrawn described? What does he look like?
He's blue.
He's a blue Thrawn.
You know, he's a
period.
I envision
blue. Abadi abada.
Yeah, I envision a couple years before that.
For the record, old.
I envision John Hamm with like red contact lenses and he's painted blue. Like that's what
it's like Yondu from MCU.
Kind of Yondu.
So kind of like a strong jaw. Kind of looks like he could command authority.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's blue.
Yeah, but he's blue.
Yeah.
Which is in the Star Wars canon, that's weird, right? Because the Empire is
now is this another case of the objective correlative with, you know, the outside reflecting the in. Is he really just
no
blue
I don't
inside?
Think he's sad.
Is he sad?
No.
Is he unhappy?
No.
He's an unhappy Thrawn.
Lot of subtext about him being blue.
He's blue.
A lot going on there.
I don't think that was intended.
He's cerulean.
So he's just blue.
Okay. He's just blue.
Okay.
He's just a blue alien dude.
Because, you know, aliens are all different colors. So
yeah, it's Star Wars.
Okay.
Right. But no, I mean, like...
Glad we cleared that up.
In the Star Wars universe, right, like in the Star Wars lore, the Emperor was like a... He was a bigot, right? So he only allowed humans in... Like, if you look at Star Wars, only humans are ever in the Empire. You're never going to see another alien, like, hanging out in Stormtrooper gear because... Because he's like he's a xenophobic bigot, right? He like stacks the deck so that the Empire is just humans,
right?
And he subjugates a bunch of
aliens. I don't know why
aliens.
That's not obvious. I mean, the whole thing is pretty fascist,
right?
Just now occurred to me.
So the fact that this guy is blue, you know, he's an alien, is like a big deal because you wouldn't be an alien and be able to climb through the ranks, and that's what makes this guy so impressive. Is like even the Emperor saw his tactical genius and you know, made him a grand admiral.
Right, right.
He's like, hey, come play for my team.
I can put my bigotry aside for a moment for strategy.
Yeah, if it means that I get to genocide more people, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh my God.
No, so like legitimately, this is a pretty good trilogy. I felt like it had a lot to really dig into. It advances the lore. It's honestly kind of cleverly written. Like, how do you write a smart character, Jeremy? Like, how do you write a character who may be a little bit smarter than you are?
Like, I write characters like that all the time, so I'm not that smart. No.
That's the role play you're into.
You give your characters, you know, I think the key is, and it's less about like, you know, some people tell you, you know, they want you to write about like a backstory, or they want you to figure out like the characters, like what they were like in their childhood, or what their favorite, you know, fucking food is, or their favorite color is and stuff. And that's not the deal. It's like, give your characters wants and desires and needs and flesh those out. Because the minute you flesh out those characters with their own wants and desires and needs, then you're going to see them react realistically in situations when those wants and desires and needs aren't met.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think for Timothy Zahn, one of the things he does to make Thrawn, you know, appear much smarter than the other characters in the book is, like, Thrawn intuits the plot of the book faster than any of the other characters do. Like, he catches on through, like, basic assumptions about where the plot is going, like, what he should be doing for a plot. And it's actually pretty smart. It works pretty well. There are a couple of instances in the second and the third book where you really see the limitations to that genius. Like Thrawn as a villain, his fatal flaw, right, is that he's too confident in his own intelligence. And so when he leaps to a conclusion that is wrong about where the plot is going and he carries on and makes a mistake, you as a reader are like, what a dummy, right? But no, it's like he's just so overconfident
so is he
in his
like,
own intelligence.
Like somebody comes up and like, Thrawn, we know where the rebels are at. We're going to chase them to the moon of Endor. And he's like, no, not until page 250.
Yeah, that's right.
He knows.
Yeah, he's like aware that he's a character in a Star Wars novel. Yeah, he's Deadpool now.
He's like that kid from Last Action Hero.
Yeah.
Or is it like those? It's more like those childhood books. It's like, if you want Thrawn to go catch the villains now, turn to page 575.
Yeah.
Those choose your own adventure books.
Yeah. No, to Timothy Zahn's credit, I think that he actually does a really good job at structuring these novels. Like, it's really good. It's paralleled in comic books by Dark Empire, which was the first of these Star Wars comics to start coming out in 1991 and 1992. That one was written by Tom Veitch and illustrated by Cam Kennedy. Cam Kennedy drew a whole bunch of Judge Dredd for 2080, the comic book from Britain. And so like Judge Dredd was a really big deal in the 70s and 80s because it brought like this punk rock kind of sensibility to comic books. And it was like really, really satirical. So you get Cam Kennedy, who, you know, draws this this comic with the same kind of punk energy as like Judge Dredd. And the result is like a Star Wars like you've never seen. Like, it's really dark. It's really fascinatingly drawn. I love the art style because it's so punk, and it evolves the story. But the story is kind of like on that, or like just the precipice of being between like, this is really cool and also just total hot garbage, right? and so the story of
the tipping
this
point.
This yeah the story of Dark Empire is a newly cloned.
I feel like that's most of my stories.
Yeah, right on the verge of hot garbage.
Hot garbage and really cool.
Yeah. I think they're better than that. Give yourself a little bit more credit. They're better than that. No, but the story of this one, a newly cloned
cool
Emperor Palpatine unleashes a fleet of terrible super weapons on the galaxy while the Skywalkers try fighting against his dark influence.
So you're telling me that there's a story about a cloned Emperor Palpatine unleashing new hot weapons against the good guys in Star Wars?
Where have we heard that before?
Like, am I really supposed to believe that's the plot of some story?
Yeah.
Abrams,
you are.
You and I are we're set to throw down, man.
Here's the thing.
I'm going to do pay-per-view tickets to throw down with J.J. Abrams.
He literally stole
this from this novel.
You are not the only person who was upset about this. In the 1990s, there was a lot of contention about this story, and Star Wars fans were either like, this is fucking awesome. George Lucas thought it was fucking awesome. For like 1 year, this is a true story. George Lucas bought the graphic novel Dark Empire and gave it to every LucasArts employee one Christmas.
Ooh.
Like, that's how much he loved it. He's got, on the Skywalker Ranch, he's got the original paintings that Cam Kennedy did, or illustrations, and the paintings of the cover artist for these comic books. He's got them hanging up in the Skywalker Ranch.
That's worse than the Christmas bonus Clark Griswold gets in Lampoon's Christmas
Vacation. You know what? Well, but... Okay.
Yeah. Thanks, George. I'll be
sure
to read
this. With
this
bonus, I'm going to put in a pool.
Listen,
now, he was trying to get it on the bestsellers list. That's why he bought so many copies.
It's entirely possible. Yeah. I mean, we can be really super cynical about it. I'm just saying, if George Lucas gave me a copy of Dark Empire, I would be like, fucking, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Maybe if he signed it.
Maybe. I don't know.
That would be like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you sign it?
Can you sign it?
I'll keep it either way, but.
This is pre-eBay, so. Yeah.
I'm winking.
You
still had comic stores.
Yeah, card shops or whatever. no, like, I think that the story actually is pretty good. I'm of the opinion that the story is pretty good, but not everybody else thought that the story was very good.
But basically, Abrams ripped this off to make his.
Oh yeah, essentially yeah, and like even bastard. As it was being written, as Tom Veitch was talking with Timothy Zahn, right? Because they were writing this stuff side by side, like in conjunction to build out this mythos or whatever. Timothy Zahn was like, your story's fucking stupid. Like, don't publish this. And he was mad because, like, the Thrawn stuff was supposed to take place after this Dark Empire stuff. But he forced Tom Veitch to place it in the timeline later because he was, Zahn was doing some stuff with clones in the Thrawn trilogy. And he was like, a clone of Emperor Palpatine is like, no, man, like, fucking stop. So he was like really mad about it. And fans were pretty divided about it, too, for a while. They were like, I don't know, like, clone of the Emperor. That's kind of. I think the story works. Like, I think it is kind of interesting. It's a new development for the characters because, like, Luke turns to the dark side for a bit and then he has to come back from the dark side like his father did. It's really kind of an interesting wrinkle. I can't say the same of the sequels that came out after that, though. So in 1994, which was the big year, that's when they like opened the floodgates and now we've got like a whole bunch of Star Wars shit coming out. We start with The Truce at Bakura by Kathy Tyers. I don't know much about Kathy Tyers. I feel like I looked her up and I found out that she publishes like Christian science fiction.
Oh no.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like a whole, I don't even know.
My brain just did something weird when you said that.
Yeah.
Those words don't even.
I can see it from here,
yeah,
Curtis.
It's your weird. Brain, it's like, yeah. No, it's like, well, science fiction.
To
with
a lot
Christian
of Christians,
allegory.
All science is fiction, right?
Right. Yeah. I'm sure there are quite a few
Christian
science
fiction.
No, like legitimately, it's like the okayest novel, I think, from 1994.
The okayest.
Yeah, the okayest. In the days after the death of
highest
the emperor.
Honor.
It's like literally after, like the day after Return of the Jedi, this book takes place. Basically, Luke and Leia have to confront a totally new adversary from outside the galaxy. Guess what that adversary is?
God.
John Hamm.
It's God.
It's not God.
No, this is
Star Wars.
Jesus.
There's the Force is God. Like, there's no God in Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
There's no God
there's
in Star Wars.
Yeah, there's no God. Okay.
There is no God.
Bertrand
in
Russell
space.
Right there. Tag him.
In space, no one can hear you pray.
No, so the antagonists of this book are sentient velociraptors.
Yes.
Yay.
Like, not because if Star Wars was missing anything, it was sentient velociraptors.
That smells of Spielberg a little bit.
And their plot is to turn Luke Skywalker's mind into a drone. Like, that's what they want. They want to turn him into a droid.
Did they have freaking laser beams attached to their heads?
No, I wish. No, they carry around. This is real.
Wait, you said
they carry around ping pong paddles that hypnotize people.
Wait. You said velociraptors, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I had to make sure I wasn't
like
having an event.
Yeah, like tripping right now.
Didn't Jurassic Park come out around this time? The original Jurassic Park.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
I think it was
the book had already been out.
See, that's where I was kind of going with that.
Yeah, the book had already been out for a while.
Weird territory.
No, it's honestly like Kathy Tyers was like, we take a little bit of Jurassic Park and a little bit of Star Wars, we get a smash hit.
Boom.
And I think right around this time, well, she might not have. Well, I don't know. Zemeckis and Spielberg and Lucas were all friends, so she could have known about. I was thinking Tom Hanks and Forrest Gump and the ping pong. Like he was ping pong champion.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
So she's
like,
I'm gonna get a
little
paddle, and I'm gonna get velociraptors.
Wait, the velociraptors have the paddles?
Yeah,
they're holding.
Yeah,
them?
They hold the paddles, and they wave the paddles at people, and they get hypnotized, and then turned into droids.
What?
And Sam
Neill
was worried about them opening doors, man. Like, now they're playing ping pong.
If you think that the velociraptors are the problem with this story, like you're missing everything else about the story.
Oh,
that
Lord,
doesn't
it just
work.
Goes. From there,
it goes deeper and deeper, and okay. This is the okayest one, right? Like I said, the okayest
this,
one.
What year is this?
1994.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. So that's followed up in March by Jedi Search, Kevin J. Anderson's first of the Jedi Academy trilogy.
It's like Star Search.
Yeah.
Was Michael Winslow at the Jedi Academy?
I really hope so. I wish. It would have been a better book, to be honest. No, so Luke Skywalker, in this story, he enlists his friends in
Google
a search
Michael
for
Winslow.
New Jedi apprentices to train his new Jedi Academy. Listen, highlight of this book is a scene in which Lando Calrissian goes to investigate one of these potential Jedi, and he watches an entire chapter long blob race.
Blob?
Blob. Blob race.
B-L-O-B. Okay.
B-L-O-B. All right. Viscous, mucousy blobs racing on some kind of obstacle
course.
Curtis,
aren't you glad you joined the show with us?
This is I'm so glad this is the first episode I sat in on. So, I mean, I imagine a blob race would be challenging.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
It sounds hard to do.
There are knives, and they have to squeeze themselves through, like meshes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you know, imagine Flubber.
I'm trying to get on board.
Imagine Star Wars with the energy of Flubber.
Ooh.
That's this book.
Okay.
All right. That's a good visual.
That takes a little time to process, but
yeah.
I'll think on it.
Think on it.
Just think about that.
So then the next book in May 1994 was The Courtship of Princess Leia by Dave Wolverton, in which Han Solo kidnaps Princess Leia in an effort to force her to fall in love with him and finally get married.
It's just filled with gentlemen, this whole
universe. So this book actually slaps. Like, it's actually really good. And it's because, like, Dave Wolverton just pulls out all of the goofy stops and just makes this story, like, you know, kind of a little bit feminine, like 90s feminist. Let's, you know, not get too ahead of ourselves. But
so wouldn't fly today. But
very progressive at the time. Yeah.
So many examples of that, too.
Yeah, so like he introduces the Witches of Dathomir, which I think is actually kind of they're fucking hardcore.
Dathomir.
Yeah, they're like these like self efficacious like women who use the Force, and nobody wants them off the planet because they could become like a matriarchal force that could overthrow the patriarchal balance of the galaxy.
Nope.
Yeah.
Can't have that.
Yeah. No, of course not. It's
like,
great.
Lightsabers are for boys.
He introduces a rival love interest for Princess Leia, who is basically Space Fabio.
Space Fabio.
That's a 90s callback for those of you who don't know. Look it up. Look up Fabio, and you'll get who this guy is.
Oh, man.
No, but it's so great. It honestly was so much fun. There were rancors that they just, like, hang out with. It's baller.
Are there drawings of these characters? Is that why you say Space Fabio?
Oh yeah.
Okay. There's no, but I mean, just straight up.
No, I mean, there's no drawing in this book. Come on now.
So far, you're fantasizing John Hamm.
There are no pictures in Star Wars.
I didn't think there were. They're really cool art on the covers, right?
Yeah.
But I've never actually flipped through once. For all I know, there is a Fabio-esque art.
The art for Courtship of Princess Leia was great. Like, George Lucas wrote a letter to Dave Wolverton saying, like, I loved your book. Like, he read the book and he was like, this is perfect. Man. And I think that's even better because, like, when you read the book and see how bonkers it is, you'll be like, George Lucas loved this story?
I mean, that doesn't surprise me a lot, given some of George Lucas's ideas.
No. He seems to get very enthusiastic about things that are a little bit half-baked.
But this book is actually a whole fucking lot of fun. Like, it genuinely surprised me how much
so
I enjoyed
that
it.
That seems to be something that keeps you reading these novels, is because, like, okay, this is a total pile of
you
shit.
You go through piles of shit, and
the
then
next one's going to be different.
Yeah, every once in a while you find one, and it's like, this is so good.
But how do you slog through the piles of shit?
You just slog.
See,
man.
For me, that's like listening to death metal. like there's so much garbage, but every now and then I'm like, yeah.
You really have to look for the diamonds in the rough, for sure. The next book was the second of Kevin J. Anderson's The Jedi Academy trilogy, Dark Apprentice. And in this one, Luke Skywalker's at Luke Skywalker's new Jedi Academy, one of his new apprentices is seduced by the dark side. This book opens with my favorite scene in all of Star Wars. Han Solo and new Jedi apprentice Kip Duran as they ski down a mountain.
Skiing with Kip.
Han Solo and his friend Kip go skiing. It's a whole fucking chapter.
Kip's family has a cabin.
Yeah. Kip's an orphan.
Han had the cabin. He's like, come on, you're an orphan? Let's go up to my snow cabin.
But if you think for a moment that Han and Kip skiing
is
irrelevant to the plot.
Yes. He's all sad.
Yeah. I thought you were skiing friend.
Helen used to take me to the cabin.
Nice pat on the head for you.
I thought we were going inner tubing later. No, if you think that this is irrelevant to the plot, well, you're wrong. Because in book three, Champions of the Force, right? When Luke Skywalker's dark apprentice roams through
Kip
the galaxy
is the dark
blowing
apprentice.
Up stars. Yeah, Kip is the dark apprentice.
Dark Apprentice Kip. What? Doesn't he have to change his name?
So they have to band together to
find
Kip.
I'm the bad guy.
Because
Kip
has stolen a super weapon, and he's
Kip
like,
is such
he's
a
like
90s,
like, universes.
I can't believe his name is Kip.
It's really Kip.
When the Kylo Ren character came out and became knowledge to me, I was like, I originally said his name is Kyle Loren. Kyle Loren?
The bad guy's Kyle.
I was like, they named him Kyle? And I thought, that's. And then after I realized it was Kylo, I was like, oh, that makes so much more sense. But now that you're saying Kip, I'm like, it could have been Kyle.
It could have been.
Yeah. It could have been Todd.
No, like, for, yeah.
I feel like that's what they do in Star Wars. They take normal sounding names and they're like, let's put a little spin on them so that they sound.
It started off as Kyle, and then it's a little too,
No, for sure,
too earthbound, Kyle.
Anyway, so, Kip's the dark apprentice. And when they're trying to talk down, talk him down, right, from, like, blowing up another star system, because Kip's, like, off the fucking deep end.
Don't do it, Kip.
Yeah. So Han Solo comes out, and I'm not even joking you. Han Solo comes in, he's like, Kip, you don't want to do it. Remember that time we went skiing together?
And Kip's like, I remember.
And Kip's like, I remember. I'll stop blowing up planets, Han.
I forgot.
Can we go skiing again?
I forgot we went skiing. Now I don't have to do this.
I've come back to the light side.
Are you kidding me, Han? What you did to me that ski weekend is why I turned evil.
I'll never trust you again.
No, like,
I'm blowing up every planet.
the friendship between Kip and Han is so funny because, like, when he goes to become an apprentice, like, Han's like, here, I got you something, Kip. And he hands him a sparkly black robe.
Oh. Like, he gives him the robe that he, like, you know, as if we don't know he's going to become a dark Jedi after
oh
that.
Oh, my God.
It's so fucking funny. It's truly great. So then we close out 1994.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
All of it is a little.
We get to the last novel in 1994 called The Crystal Star. Crystal Star. Not The Crystal Scar.
Wait, what's the whole title?
Just The Crystal Star.
Oh, okay, not something and then subtitle and then subtitle.
No,
colon.
Yeah. Secondary title, tertiary title.
Yeah. No, it's just the Crystal Star.
Well, you got to reel it in every now and then, don't you?
Yeah,
you
exactly. Just, yeah. So this one's written by Vonda N. McIntyre. And Vonda McIntyre.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, Vonda McIntyre was an actual, like, she won a Hugo Award, a Nebula Award, a Locus Award. Like, she's a heavy hitter in...
Are these fictional awards?
No, these are real. But every Hugo Award that was winner that was just listening to us, like, shut down shop. Okay. Fucking not listening anymore.
Like I said, I know nothing
First
here.
My wife, now, like, the sci-fi, like, listeners. Yeah. I mean, we're now up to warding off, like, two audiences.
I mean, if you're a genre,
that was my bad.
If you're a genre writer, like winning a Hugo is like that's the pinnacle. Right?
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's like the highest you can go in genre.
I'm a musician and audio engineer, so those are the things I know.
Yeah.
All right.
No. So she won. She
it's
won
right
these,
up there with like a Grammy for like a musician.
Yeah. She won these very prestigious awards in the 70s. So we get to 1994 and she writes Star Wars. Okay. And this book. Basically, Han and Leia's children are kidnapped, and the heroes track them down to a dangerous colony at the edge of a crystal star. Mm. It's the dumbest fucking book I've read this year. Straight up.
It sounds
just,
cool.
Just like some highlights from this, right? Luke Skywalker gets cut off from the Force because of X-rays. That's a thing that happens, apparently.
What do you mean, because of X-rays?
Because that's all I have.
Because he did X-rays,
no,
he got
because,
cut off?
Because of X-rays. There's no real reason.
The X-rays cut him off.
Yeah.
He thought he broke his arm. He went to the doctor. The doctor's like, no, it's just sprained.
And now he can't use the Force
Luke,
anymore.
You got an X-ray, you're out.
No, you like force, legitimately, Luke. the explanation is he goes to a space station. The space station is bombarded with X-rays, and now he can't use the Force anymore.
Oh.
So he joins a cult of a blob that wants to eat him.
Like the blob is a cult leader?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, there's like a cult around this blob, and the blob wants to eat Luke Skywalker. That's the whole purpose. No, the whole existence of this, the
so
whole purpose
him?
Of this blob is I need to eat someone who does the Force.
Oh, what That's does that it. Do? What does that accomplish? Can he have the Force now if he eats
no,
somebody
he,
that has
he
it?
No, he can open a portal to another dimension and go back to whatever fucking universe he came from.
Oh.
It's stupid.
Weird.
It's really dumb.
Does he have a name, the blob?
Yeah, he does. I forgot it.
Okay.
Is this the one
not important?
It's something really. It's Waru. That's the name of the blob.
There you go.
Waru.
Is this the one you were telling me before, like that Han Solo is drunk like all the way through?
Yeah, that's the other thing that's hilarious about this book.
Drunk.
Yeah, Han Solo is just flat out
on
fucking
space liquor.
Yeah, he's fucking blasted.
How does that work?
The whole book.
Don't you need oxygen to make alcohol?
There's oxygen.
What
obviously.
Do you think these aliens
are drinking? They're all drink. What do they think they drink when they're listening to jizz in the canteen?
Yeah, if all you have to listen to is jizz, you're probably gonna be sauced
you're
all
fucking
day.
Sauced, exactly.
Sauced and jizz.
Sauced.
Sorry.
So
we just keep going there.
So Han Solo.
That's
gonna
be the name of my Star Wars book when I write one. Sauced and jizz.
Sauced and jizz. And George is like, I love it.
Star Wars. Star Wars. Sauced and jizz. An adventure of Han and Kip.
I'm going to buy a copy for everyone I know.
Adventure of Han and Kip.
Yeah. No, and then the last crazy thing. Like,
the weird ski weekend. Yes. Oh, man.
Remember when you played that jizz? I felt it wash over me, Han.
Oh, God almighty! My face is
no,
red.
No, so the other thing that I love about this book that's just totally stupid is, like, Princess Leia has to, like, hide her identity for reasons. And in order to do that, she dyes her hair green and then wears it in front of her face like she's like an emo girl.
Like Billie Eilish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Space Billy.
Yeah, so she goes around and she calls herself... Leila.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Man, she's clever.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but what's so funny is that like she's hanging out with this lady, right? And the lady's talking to her the whole time, and then finally she's like,
at the end of the book when Leia like gets her children back, the lady is like, Leila, who are you? And Leia goes, I'm Princess Leia. And she just like pulls back her hair, right? Her green hair. And all of a sudden, like the woman's like,
oh my God.
I never guessed.
It's put like it back. Put it
taking
back.
Off the glasses, right?
Yeah, no,
holy
exactly.
Shit.
Holy shit. You've been here the whole time? Like that's a real moment in this book. It actually happens that way.
Oh my
like,
God.
Like it actually, she actually is like, it's you.
Leia should have been like, you couldn't have figured out from my, yeah, from my yeah. bullshit name.
Maybe it was supposed to be sarcastic. It was like, oh, it's you.
Oh,
I don't know. Maybe
well,
it
was the
90s.
The
so. Oh, none of us knew.
But that's the thing. Like again, the punk 90s. Like Hugo Award winner Vonda McIntyre is like, Han's drunk all the time. Princess Leia dyes her hair. Like,
yeah,
it's
all the counterculture terrible. That the kids are into.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Luke's wearing flannel.
Yeah.
Leia watches the real world.
Yeah. I'm just normal now, so just get eaten by this blob.
The blob.
The blob.
Wulu? What's his name?
Waru. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Waru.
It's terrible. It's just such a bad
I want to eat
such
you.
A bad book.
I'm gonna follow you yeah. for Yeah, I'm in your cult now.
There were some other comic books, too. I think I
passion.
Only bring these up because I think you'll get a kick out of them. Dark Empire 2 with Tom Veitch. Another clone of the Empire Emperor threatens the galaxy with another terrible super weapon. If it sounds like he's just playing his
so
greatest hits, that's because he is.
The Emperor
wrote,
has no new plan. He's like, this is going to work, damn
Emperor's
it.
He's like Wile E. Coyote. He keeps going to the Acme store.
Yeah.
I'm sure this will work.
But, and what's hilarious is that he's got like a bunch of sycophants around him who are just like, yes, that's a great idea, yeah. Mr.
Dark
Emperor.
Dark Empire 3, the Emperor paints a big tunnel on the side of a mountain.
No. There was a Dark Empire 3. It was called Empire's End, in which the last clone of the Empire threatens the galaxy with another terrible super weapon.
Oh, God.
It was the story he liked so much, he did it 3 times.
If it ain't broken, don't fix it, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Except that after the first time, it was like, get a new shtick, Tom.
Mm.
Please,
this
for fuck's
guy.
Sake, get a new shtick. So, that's the longest journey. This is probably our longest episode by far.
It's probably going to be, yeah.
Our next Star Wars update will not be as long.
I thought you were going to have to chop this one up into several episodes. I'm actually kind of impressed you made it from, what, 1978?
Yeah, 1976 to 95.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's, I mean, the time it took you to read those, I'm sure, is...
A whole year. Like, a full-on year
so
is what
even
it
if we're, like, an hour or so in, yeah, you know, that's pretty good.
Yeah. No, so, I mean,
I'm impressed.
So I'm at the end of this journey, and it's like, what did I learn, Jeremy? Other than that, Han Solo likes skiing.
Anybody?
J.J. Abrams isn't
novel.
The first person to ruin Star Wars.
Yeah, no, I have a lot more patience, I think, for some of the stuff that like Rian Johnson tries in Episode 8.
Rian Johnson's Star Wars film is like a. Is like a bad Star Wars novel from like this era.
I think all three of those sequels are like a bad Star Wars novel.
Oh, they absolutely are.
I really do. And I think that the problem with these sequels is like they go in without really any understanding of who the characters are and with no reverence for source material. You know, one of the problems that I have with Han Solo in the sequel movies is like it throws away all of the established media that we get for Han Solo. In these books, Han Solo is a family man, like except for the one book where he's fucking drunk all the time. Like,
what about the one where he kidnapped Leia to make him make her
which
do
is
stuff.
Also hilarious. No, like really, he like shoots her with like a mind ray gun and he's like, you're gonna fall in love with me, we're gonna go on a date.
And obviously
is that
she
when he's
does
drunk?
Because they get
no
they
he's
kids.
Not he's not drunk, he's just really upset because like Leia's like with Space Fabio and he's like, I'm not Space Fabio. So he wins a planet in a bet and he like kidnaps her to go on a date to this planet which is full of force witches, and that's when he's like, all right, maybe
I kind of fucked
up a little
bit.
You know,
I don't know that Space Harrison Ford should feel threatened by Space Fabio. You know?
No, probably
Harrison
not.
Harrison Ford's a pretty big, you know.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big
he's
deal,
a,
too.
Yeah, he's a pretty good dude. No, but I mean, like, in these books, like, aside from the weird missteps that I think they make in some of the storytelling, like, Han Solo's a family man. And we see that even in the original movies, like his whole character arc is going from someone who is exceptionally selfish to someone who is becoming more and more exceptionally selfless, you know, to the point that he serves the Empire and really does like genuinely fall in love with Princess Leia. So why is it then that we have all of this established media where Han Solo is a family man, right? A guy who is committed now to the new him, committed to making things work. We get a sequel where he's a deadbeat dad who's just fucking palling around with his friend from high school. That's so fucking lame and does nothing to service the character as we knew it, even from the original trilogy. I feel the same way about Luke Skywalker and how he's treated, because Luke goes from the guy who is impetuous and like super rowdy and wants to go and have a bunch of action. And through the course of the movies and then the novels later, has to learn to temper that with patience, has to look to find, a way of treating everyone with empathy. You know, at first he's like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to, you know, party hardy. I'm going to be a space jockey, whatever. And then he runs into...
It's actually original dialogue from Star Wars.
Exactly, yeah.
Before it was cut.
Yeah. He confronts, you know, he sees his mentor, Obi-Wan Kenobi, get killed by Darth Vader and then goes on this mission of almost like vengeance and then has to come around to see the biggest monster in the entire fucking galaxy, Darth Vader, genocidal maniac.
Yeah.
He's like, no, man, I see that there's good in you. I can sense the positivity in you. Like, come back. It's not too late to atone for the things that you've done.
That means he's a true Jedi now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so to see him in these movies later on, where Rian Johnson is like, let's take this dude who saw Space Hitler, right? And was like, no, this guy could be redemed. There is an atonement that could be had here. And instead he sees his nephew who has a couple bad dreams sometimes. And he's like, I'm a fucking kill this kid. Right? Like, how do we go from the dude who sees good in this genocidal, like truly terrifying monster of a dude and says, I see good in you, you're redeemable, but then turns around and
goes, understand the source material. That's actually something I want to talk about. I think we'll bring up in our next episode too, because I do feel there's a strong comparison here. But it's just clear that Abrams and Rian Johnson just did not like this Vonda McIntyre, whatever.
Yeah.
They just didn't give a shit about the source material.
I don't think she knew what a Star Wars was.
No.
And it's weird because it's not like she's a stranger to a lot of this fiction. Vonda McIntyre also adapted several of the Star Trek books into Star Trek movies into novels. She gave Hikaru Sulu his first name. She is the reason why Sulu has a first name as a character. It's not like she's completely, it's not like she's completely out of the loop, but it feels like she just had no fucking clue what Star Wars even was. And agreed to write this movie.
The movies aren't that long. This book. Just sit down and watch the movies at the very least.
Like right. No, three. Exactly. Exactly. It's really weird. So I have this relationship, I think, with this sequel material that it's like, it's really interesting to see it all evolve. It's really interesting to see the way that the characters, you know, grow or, develop over time. And at the same time, it makes me so mad that, you know, the actual sequel canon stuff that we do have from these filmmakers, you know, feels so very inconsistent with the tone of the characters as set in the original films. Because for all that this stuff kind of feels pretty crummy at times, and I will admit, I struggled through a couple of these books to find the good stuff. One thing that I can say for this extended canon is like there is some interesting character development to be had in these stories. Even the bad stuff, like Kip and Han, like skiing or something like that, Kevin Anderson does come in with a plan to try to give these characters real arcs, to give these characters real stakes and to try to develop them into interesting characters. You know, Luke Skywalker in Kevin J. Anderson's trilogy is not looking for a fight ever.
Right.
He, and in fact, I don't think there's ever even a point where he draws his lightsaber to clash with someone else, except in the defense of like some of his students. And it's really interesting to me that he creates this character who has gone from like the kid who's ready to jump in an X-wing and blow up a Death Star to this like more reserved Jedi master who's still unsure of his legacy.
Right.
It's I don't know. It's so still interesting.
Having this big array of authors who all interpret the story differently, they all see the trajectory go in different ways. Seems like a cool way to reach a ton of people, get a really big audience, because some people don't want Luke to pull his lightsaber out. So like that version of Luke probably rings a bell for a lot of people, and then you've got the other version. So like it just seems like a really smart way to make Star Wars belong to everybody who wants it.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, definitely. Cool. There's something in here for everyone.
That's my interpretation.
Yeah.
Of all
and
this.
One of the interesting things is like, as I read stuff like The Crystal Star, which I thought was just such a garbage book.
I keep thinking of that Jim Henson movie.
The Dark Crystal.
Me too.
I keep wanting to go there.
Which definitely pretty much vibes. Ruined my life, by the way.
That was like, horrifying.
I'm not okay. I'm not okay to this day. I would be more okay now if I had never seen it.
That's a really great horror film.
Yeah.
When they went...
Yeah.
I was like, shut up!
Yeah. Anyway. No doubt. No, I think you're right. And what's interesting is like I hated Crystal Star. I thought it was such a terrible book. And yet that book has some readers who were like, this is the way it should go.
Yeah.
Luke Skywalker should totally get eaten by a blob.
And then all the readers get to argue and form these coalitions against one another. And George is sitting there just raking the cash
our comments. And we're going to get some really pissed off people on Twitter.
Yeah.
Or on Reddit. Like,
you know, I feel
George
so bad
just
about
wants engagement. He doesn't care about how you feel about
I
it.
I feel super bad though, because some of these authors, you know, like they are really active. They actually, like, Timothy Zahn is still writing fucking Star Wars stuff.
Nice.
He's still out there doing shit. Kevin,
I want to do one.
Yeah, who wouldn't?
I told
it seems
you my
like
title.
Anybody can just pick it up and do it, right?
I told you my title.
I mean, Kevin J. Anderson. Yeah. Kevin J. Anderson is still showing up to cons. You know, he's still signing books for people. I have some very contentious views about his work because I don't think that he's actually a very good writer.
He's
and
not
at
related
the same
to
time,
Wes Anderson, is he?
No.
That'd be a cool kind of take on Star Wars.
A Wes Anderson take on Star Wars?
Yeah. That would be.
Oh my God.
That would be really.
That would take me 20 minutes just to imagine.
That would be a really fascinating.
That's a nice mashup.
Development. No, but I think like Kevin J. Anderson, like don't change your stuff. Like I'm glad this Star Wars exists because I for all of its faults, and it had many faults, I still was like, this is very entertaining. I don't know where the fuck this comes from, Kevin J. Anderson. he delivers with the same energy of like a camp counselor just desperate to be like relevant to the kids these days.
Oh wow.
Straight up,
that's such a great analogy. I spent a lot of time in camp as a kid, so that really rung a bell with me.
No, I really think his books are like that for sure. But I'm like, you know, I don't resent that any of this stuff exists. And if I saw Kevin J. Anderson at a con or something like that, you can bet your ass I would have the trilogy from 1994 that I read. Like I'd have him sign it and very unironically be like, I love your work.
And then I hear your podcast.
And then I I'm sure he's out there on Twitter and he's like, oh, I'll give these guys a listen. And like fucking, you know, probably go off and hate me forever. But very genuinely, I'm like, I think this story is so bad
him.
In so many ways. And yet at the same time, I'm like, there's so much joy I get out of reading experience.
Right.
And like how enthusiastic I am. I'm like, you know what, Kevin J. Anderson, write more fucking Star Wars. I'm gonna be right there with you. Read this stuff. Because there's, I don't know, there's just something ineffable about it. Like you just kind of gotta kind of grab it and let it do its thing, and eventually you're just like, yeah, Kip Duran, I remember that guy. Yeah, the skiing bro.
It's ineffable unless it's about Kit and Han skiing together.
Kip and Hans.
Listen.
Skiing on the mountain.
Then it's effable. Then it's completely effable.
Effable.
Oh, man.
We
just shifted the meaning of that word around.
I'm just going to throw out jizz forever.
Yeah.
If you say anything sexual, Jeremy just runs with it through the whole thing.
That's my shtick,
it's
man.
It's one of my favorite things about this. Yeah.
That's it. That's Star Wars Update 1995. We did it, guys.
We are updated.
We are updated.
All right.
I'll come back in like 6 more books and we'll do 1996.
I enjoy this a lot more than I expected. I really didn't know what to expect. I didn't think I was going to not enjoy it, but I thought at the very least I'd be sitting there like,
These books, genuinely, these books are bonkers. What continues to astonish me is not just like I'm wearing like Star. I've got
you
Star
got
Wars
Star
Wars.
You were geared out
I've got,
in Star Wars.
I've got my Boba Fett.
I forgot
sweatshirt.
All my Star Wars gear today.
Yeah.
I did too.
Yeah, no, it went from an ironic hobby to like now a genuine passion. Where right. I'm like, no, this stuff is actually quite fun, and if you want to join this community, you should. And also know that like man, you can waste. Your life, like, just straight up waste.
You
your
can
life.
Waste your life writing these books.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Or if you don't want to, just listen to me rant about it. Because this is a series for sure.
This will be a series. This is the first of many.
Yeah.
Until then, we've got a few more episodes coming. I want to thank again, not just thank our producers, but give a warm welcome to Curtis as he joins us on the mic.
Yeah, thank you, sirs.
Your voice is very welcome.
Definitely. We've got some great stuff coming up for you. We've got we're working on the anthology right now. So by the time this comes out, we'll be pretty close to being finished with the anthology. And we've got a cover potentially. So I can't wait to do the cover reveal.
Yeah. By the time you hear this podcast, hopefully that cover will have been revealed.
Hopefully.
It's pretty baller. I really love the cover.
I do too.
I think that it definitely looks as high quality as the stories in our anthology. We've been editing the anthology, working on our last edits as we put together the final product, and it's so exciting because there's so much talent involved in this anthology.
And we are going to be at StokerCon next May, so look out for Slay House Publishing at StokerCon. What else do we have going on, man? We got our submissions page is up for next year. So we've got a lot to,
Be thinking about what you want to pitch to Slay House Publishing, for the 2022 year. I know that's right around the corner and we're really looking forward to it a lot.
Yep.
We've got, our first author interview. Coming up, that should drop sometime in December.
Yep.
Very excited to be talking to Karen Huff.
Yep.
About her novel Ground Control.
And about she's also a professional editor, and she's worked with us here at Slay House, and so we're really happy to have that conversation with her.
Yeah, really excited.
We've got
to talk to her.
We've got a four-part series coming up of Dracula. And Bram Stoker, and I'm doing a shit ton of research. Like when you guys see the books that I've read. Just to get this series together, like you are going to be legit impressed. Like I've got this
way
thing
more
fucking covered.
Way more impressed than my 19 bullshit Star Wars novels.
I don't, man, I am impressed by that because I don't know if I could have. I don't know if I could have made it through. And I'm a huge fan of Star Wars. Like, I got done telling all of you and all of you at home how I have watched Star Wars since I was literally a baby, and. I felt like I was a huge fan. Like I had all the toys when I was a kid. I had the Darth Vader, like the toy case thing that held all the action figures. I had the 3-foot tall R2-D2 that you could put all the toys in.
I saved up and sent off
because back then, like in those Mattel toys, you couldn't just go to the store and buy the Emperor. You had to like get the points on the back of the packages and like save up for them and then send them off. And I did that to get the little Emperor figurine.
You earned it.
I earned it. And I thought I was a huge fan of Star Wars, but I do not legitimately think I could make it through these books. So thank you, Trevor, for shackling that for the rest of
Doing
us who
a great
just can't.
Service.
Yeah. Always.
Strapping on that yoke and just carrying that burden for the rest of us.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, everybody. So stay tuned. Follow us on social media. I'm not going to go through the list again because that's exhausting. But we are all over the place on social media. So just please follow us. And we thank you all for listening. And we can't wait to talk to you again next week.
Heck yeah.